This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net.
Former adult film star Robin Weathers has skated by as Pornucopia's do-nothing accountant for years. And who can blame her? Her supervisor has only encouraged her dilly-dallying, and it's given her oodles of time to do what she loves most, coach the talent at her mentor's feminist pornography studio. But then the IRS comes knocking. With her supervisor unable to bail her out, Robin can either come clean and risk her friendships and career, or buck up and find another way to skirt the system. No matter how she chooses, along the way she'll have to confront her blossoming feelings for the man she's enlisted to teach her accounting, and the return of the woman she's always loved, who's finally ready to try to make things work. Accounting for It All by R.R. Campbell. Available November 2018 from 9-Star Press. For more, visit accountingforitall.com. That's accountingforitall.com. Thanks for listening. There are many choices a writer must make and questions we must answer when setting out to work on a new manuscript. Who are our characters? When will the story take place? Will we plot it? Pants it? Something in between? If we do plot it, how? What structure models might we have at our disposal to support our plot? And how do we choose the model that best suits our story? Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 3 of Biblio Breakdown here on the RightsCast Network. If you're new to Biblio Breakdowns, the gist of these episodes is the following. We examine a book from the perspective of a writer with an emphasis on putting the book's structure, characterization, concept, and more under the microscope. In so doing, it's our goal to better understand how other writers tackle these matters in their own work, and then let that inform our own writing as we see fit. Along the way, I'll also offer a few writing exercises to get us thinking more critically about the topics we cover. This particular Biblio Breakdown episode is unique, though, in that it's not really a Biblio Breakdown, but rather a tele-breakdown? That's right, today we'll be using a TV show to explore our episode's topic, with that show being Pendleton Ward's Adventure Time. So come on and grab your friends, we're off to very distant lands in this episode of Biblio Breakdown here on the RightsCast Network. Before we depart on this journey of ours, let's further define what it is about Adventure Time we'll be exploring and the capacity in which we'll be exploring it. Today we'll be taking a look at Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey plot structure, which is put to use rather explicitly in Episode 5 of Season 1, The Enchiridion. You don't need to have seen this episode for the following analysis to be useful to you, but as of this Biblio Breakdown's publication, The Enchiridion is available for streaming on Hulu if you want to check it out. With that behind us, let's take a moment to acknowledge what the hero's journey is, why it's useful, and how noteworthy it is that Adventure Time's writers managed to cram nearly all 12 steps of the hero's journey into a 12-minute cartoon. As you might have already put together, the hero's journey, or monomyth, is a plot structure model that's commonly used in science fiction and fantasy especially. The hero's journey is useful to be familiar with not only for its utility in providing us with a roadmap that might be of benefit as we plan journeys for our own characters, but also in that it gives us as writers, readers, and general consumers of media an opportunity to break down a book or episode structure into more bite-sized, easily accessible bits. Then, with a more fundamental understanding of each step, we become more astute consumers and, in turn, creatives. The noteworthiness of a single 12-minute episode of Adventure Time incorporating nearly all 12 steps of the hero's journey structure is that it tells us as writers that whether we're writing a full-length novel or even flash fiction, there are ways for us to bake this structure or similar structures into our work. So what are the 12 steps of the hero's journey, what do they entail, and how do they figure into this episode of Adventure Time? I'll start with the first bit of that question by naming all 12 steps of the journey, just so we have some acquaintance with them before we begin our analysis. Those 12 steps are 1. The ordinary world. 2. The call to action. 3. The refusal of the call. 4. Meeting the mentor. 5. Crossing the threshold. 6. Tests, allies, and enemies. 7. The approach. 8. The ordeal. 9. The reward. 10. The road home. 11. The resurrection. And 12. The return home. If you didn't get all that down, no worries. That's what the rest of this episode's for. Or, if you don't think you wrote them down in the right order somehow, never fear. There's some wiggle room in the order in which these steps must take place, So in other words, their order isn't as rigid as one might think at first glance. Let's hop to it then by exploring step one of the hero's journey, the ordinary world. The ordinary world is how our hero's journey stories open, where the reader, or viewer in this case, sees the world as it exists for our hero before the introduction of the story's primary conflict. In this and all episodes of Adventure Time, the opening credits themselves provide a brief overview of the ordinary world as we pass from kingdom to kingdom, catching glimpses of supporting characters and their own ordinary worlds as we wind our way toward Finn and his sidekick Jake as they share a fist bump to kick off the show's theme song. For those who may not have seen Adventure Time before, this opening provides context similar to the opening credits of HBO's Game of Thrones, though that show does so in a very different style than Adventure Time. In The Enchiridion, the Adventure Time episode we are exploring as part of this analysis, we actually see further establishment of the ordinary world in the moments that immediately follow the conclusion of the show's theme song. As the episode opens, we see a party taking place in the Candy Kingdom. Everything's fine, everything's good, we're all having a nice time dancing and hooting and hollering, until some clumsy donut dives into the tower from which Princess Bubblegum is overseeing the goings-on below. The princess falls from high above, but Finn, our intrepid hero, rescues the princess just before she hits the ground. Our hero's prowess in the ordinary world has now been established, and we're less than a minute into the episode. Finn's heroics give Princess Bubblegum an idea, which leads us to the next step in the hero's journey, the call to adventure. Before we get into step two, however, let's take a minute to consider an exercise for step one of the hero's journey, the ordinary world. Reflect now on your story's opening pages. Have you made sure to include little details that suggest the daily happenings for your hero and the world in which they live before their routine is interrupted by step two, the call to adventure? What regular old thing are they up to when the novel begins? What does that tell us about our hero to be, their world, and the people around them? A word of caution here. Don't feel as though you need an entire chapter dedicated to showing your character waltzing around town a la the bonjour scene from Beauty and the Beast. There's nothing inherently wrong with openings like that. Who could be upset about the baker going about with his tray like always? But as writers, I feel it's important we challenge ourselves to advance on multiple fronts at once, or, where possible, to ensure we're in the very least keeping some degree of tension on the page, and this includes page one. If you're unsure what I mean by tension, check out episode 41 of the R.R. Campbell Writescast at writescast.net, where that episode's guest and I explore tension and its utility in great detail. For now, though, let's press on into step two of the hero's journey, the call to action. As the step's name might imply, this is the moment where our hero is called to act. Some intervening force steps into our main character's ordinary world, causing a disturbance of some kind to their routine and imploring them to set off on an adventure. Where we last left Finn, Adventure Time's hero, he had just saved Princess Bubblegum from a terrible fall. In the second scene of this episode, Princess Bubblegum goes on to present Finn with an image of the Enchiridion, a book that, were Finn to possess it, would make Finn, quote, an even better hero, end quote. The problem? The Enchiridion lies in Mount Kragdor and is guarded by, quote, a manly minotaur. As Princess Bubblegum goes on, she says the book is waiting for a righteous hero to claim it. At this juncture in the hero's journey, our protagonist must decide whether to take up or refuse this incredibly explicit call to action. That is to say, will we have a reluctant or eager hero? There's a question worth asking yourself about your own main character. Do they rush to accept the challenge presented to them at this juncture in their own journey, or do they shy away and turn inward, unsure whether they're up to taking on the call to adventure the universe, or in this case, a princess, has posed to them? How might your story change if they were reluctant instead of eager, or eager instead of reluctant? Well, if you have a reluctant hero, you're well on your way to incorporating the third step in the hero's journey, the refusal of the call. In hero's journey arcs that strictly adhere to the archetypal structure, our protagonist initially refuses the call to action posed in step two. But why? Well, showing our protagonist as reluctant leaves room for growth and can deepen the notion that they're really making a sacrifice by going on this journey. In Adventure Time, however, the whole point of the show is, well, adventure. The very notion of adventure is what leads Finn to immediately take up the call to action that Princess Bubblegum casts upon him. In fact, Finn literally says he's, quote, totally into this adventure stuff. so it's no wonder he takes on the role of the eager hero. Finn does, however, have one moment of brief hesitation when he asks Princess Bubblegum if she thinks he'll succeed, but his doubt is short-lived. It's hardly a moment later that Finn dives out of a window and into the next step of the hero's journey, the meeting of the mentor. What this example suggests, of course, is that one need not adhere 100% to the 12 steps of the hero's journey for it to provide our stories with a strong foundation. When Finn dives out of that window, he's essentially bypassing the refusal of the call entirely, going from step 2 to step 4 in a single bound. Now, step 4, the meeting of the mentor, is where our analysis of this episode of Adventure Time gets a little muddled. The meeting of the mentor is normally the step in the hero's journey where our hero meets the individual that will advise and lay the groundwork for our hero to become more confident and adept during their journey. In the original Star Wars films, think about the moment that Luke meets Yoda, for example. Yoda is a classic example of a mentor, and a lovable one at that. In this episode of Adventure Time, however, the mentor role is filled by Finn's co-star, Jake the dog, who catches Finn after he dives out of that window on his way to adventure. Jake is, in the very least, a friend and confidant of Finn's, and though he may not train or advise Finn in the same way that Yoda does to Luke in Star Wars, Jake more or less fills the role of the mentor in this and other episodes of the Adventure Time series. After Jake saves Finn from his cartoony death, the two of them are ready to make their way to Mount Kragdor in order to recover the Enchiridion and become, in the show's words, even better heroes. Before we jump into Step 5 of the hero's journey, let's pause for a moment to consider Step 4 in our own work, the meeting of the mentor. Who is it that guides, trains, or advises our protagonist along the way or at the start of their journey? How do the knowledge and skills they possess help better equip our heroes for what lies ahead? Are their skills unique, making them the only person well-suited to help our main character, or are they simply someone our protagonist already trusts? Or perhaps they're a combination of both. How might the stage in our narrative change if the mentor wasn't there? Or, if you don't have a mentor, how might the story change with the inclusion of one? So far we've covered the first four of the 12 steps in the hero's journey, advancing from the ordinary world into the call to action, the refusal of that call, and then into the meeting of the mentor. With a third of our steps now taken, we can venture into step 5, the crossing of the threshold. This crossing of the threshold can be literal or figurative. In the Lord of the Rings trilogy, for example, Frodo crosses the threshold when he leaves the Shire, which is a very literal leaving of one place for another. Now let's compare that with Jon Snow swearing the oath of the Night's Watch in a Game of Thrones. This too is a crossing of a threshold despite not being a physical movement in the world of Westeros. Jon Snow did, of course, have another crossing of the threshold earlier in his story when he set off for the Wall from Winterfell. So what does that tell us? It tells us all stories don't necessarily have to follow each of these 12 steps in a clear linear order for them to be effective, which is important to keep in mind when using this or any other structure model. I personally found that after getting all 12 steps down pat, as I did in my debut novel Accounting for It All, it's become easier over time to tinker with structure models like these in ways that might help me breathe new life into my plot's foundations. In the archetypal fifth step, however, regardless of whether a literal, physical threshold is crossed, the important thing about this step is that a character ought to take it knowing there's no turning back once they do. Why? Because if a character leaves home or abandons their comfort zone and could, at any time, turn right back around and head for safety, what keeps them from doing so when the going gets tough later in their journey? By creating a point of no return, we're also increasing the pressure on our main character as they attempt to find resolution, achieve their goal, or complete whatever mission they're on. And well-motivated tension is sure to keep any reader turning pages, which is never a bad thing. So what about the crossing of the threshold in our episode of Adventure Time? Well, this episode of the show takes the crossing of the threshold about as literally as it possibly can when Jake the dog and Finn the human simply walk across a drawbridge over a moat. That's it. That's their very literal crossing of the threshold. Now, I understand how this might seem like a cop-out, but keep in mind these episodes are 12 minutes long and we have 12 steps to cover. With the real meat of the hero's journey still before us, it makes sense the show's writers wouldn't spend too much time lingering on this threshold moment. As writers ourselves, though, this can be one final moment to show some trepidation on the part of our protagonist. Perhaps they recognize that once they take this action or say these words or swear this oath, their lives will never be the same. Again, though, Finn is, quote, totally into this adventure stuff, so there's no sense in dwelling too long on the crossing of the threshold where Adventure Time is concerned. So now, with the threshold crossed, we can advance into step 6 of the hero's journey. Tests, allies, and enemies. It's probably worth noting at this juncture that equal page time isn't given to each one of these steps. I mention this now because step 6 is, in most stories, the step that receives the most page time. In fact, steps 1 through 5, that's the ordinary world through the crossing of the threshold, could very much be viewed as setup in many narratives, taking place over maybe 3 chapters or, yes, even a single scene. This shouldn't necessarily be surprising. We're talking about the hero's journey in the context of a 12-minute cartoon, after all, which managed to cram the first 5 steps of the hero's journey into the first couple minutes of the episode. And I won't blame any listener who's currently wondering whether it's a good idea to sprint through these first 5 steps. We don't want readers to feel rushed in our novel's earliest pages, right? To resolve these doubts, let me put it this way. I'd argue that we as readers or viewers don't have a strong sense of our main character's stakes, or their commitment to them, until they've crossed the threshold in step 5. Remember, the idea in creating a threshold for our characters to cross is that by crossing this boundary, they will no longer be able to return to their ordinary world without confronting their primary conflict head-on. So, if instead of spending a scene or a few chapters on steps 1 through 5, a writer spent 10 to 15 chapters doing this, what would a reader's investment in the character be for those first 15 chapters? Granted, chapter length isn't monolithic, and as such, we have to address all of this in generalities, so let's maybe put it this way instead. I'd wager the first 5 steps of the hero's journey should take place by the 20% mark in our stories at the max. That's kind of a guesstimate, but I think it emphasizes how much of our characters' journeys lie ahead, even though we've passed through more than 40% of the 12 steps after completing step 5. Alright, I'll ease off on the math for now and return to analyzing the hero's journey in Adventure Time. We're in step 6 now, which for the purposes of this conversation we'll call Tests, Allies, and Enemies. Step 6, as suggested earlier, is a major step in the hero's journey. This is where our protagonists are tested both physically and mentally, and their relationship with their mentor may or may not become strained. Will our hero become disillusioned with the quest on which they've been sent, or perhaps even with the person they've become? Step 6 is where these seeds of doubt can be sown, for this garden is great and full of action, and why not make our protagonist's struggle that much greater? Really though, the emphasis of this step in the hero's journey is on the action. There are puzzles to solve, alliances to be made or broken, and enemies to identify and defeat. In our episode of Adventure Time, Finn and Jake kick off step 6 when they encounter a gatekeeper, Keeper as he's so aptly named, he's even dressed like a key, and this keeper confronts them with a riddle. He gives a long-winded speech about how many have tried to enter, but none have had the key to use in the locked gate that separates Mount Kragdor from the outside world. As Keeper keeps rattling on, Finn, without so much as a word, picks up Keeper, inserts him into the lock, and walks on through the gate. To make this moment even more on the nose, Keeper then hollers after Finn and Jake as they walk away. "You've passed the first trial, young heroes," he says, in an extremely explicit acknowledgement of the episode's hero's journey structure. And after Finn and Jake are out of earshot, Keeper even adds that, "There are many trials ahead of you, and each trial is more treacherous than the last." And just like that, we're set up for the rest of step 6. As we wade deeper into step 6 of 12, we're hardly over 4 minutes into the episode, which is in keeping with our expectations based on our earlier discussion of how much story steps 1 through 5 should consume. From here on out in step 6, there are at least 2 major tests that Finn faces as part of this stage in his journey. To paint with a wider brush, however, I'll offer up some additional examples of what one might encounter during the 6th step from another favorite of mine, the A Song of Ice and Fire series. This will require me to dive into some spoilers through A Clash of Kings or Season 2 of Game of Thrones. Think of Jon Snow again. In A Clash of Kings, he ends up beyond the Wall as part of the Night's Watch's mission to figure out what Mance Rayder's up to, as well as to see if they can find his presumably dead Uncle Benjen. The entire time Jon's beyond the Wall is basically the 6th step in the hero's journey. He's tested when he is tasked with killing a wildling, Ygritte, who, though originally his prisoner, makes John her prisoner, which makes her, for the moment, an enemy. John is then reunited with the also-captured Quarren Halfhand, an ally, and while all of this is going on, we see Ygritte slowly go from enemy to ally by sticking up for John a few times when Rattleshirt would have much rather had him executed. The list goes on. Seriously, if you go reread the novels or watch John's arc in particular, you can find many of these steps strewn throughout his story. Let's take a moment now to consider our own manuscripts. What tests do our main characters face along their way? What allies do they meet? What enemies? Do any of those allies become enemies, or do enemies become allies? What unique skills or insight do the members of your main character's crew offer to help them overcome the tests and obstacles they confront? Putting some thought into the answers to those questions can help us bring better clarity to the nature of this critical step in our heroes' journeys. Not only that, but answering them will also ensure our main character and their pals are distinct enough from one another, something that's also generally of great import when advancing a narrative. We're now 6 of 12 steps through the hero's journey, which means we're ready for step 7, the approach. At this stage, the hero and their allies prepare to confront their primary challenge. Consider this their last tune-up before they slide into the inevitable end. If you're a gamer who's familiar with the Legend of Zelda franchise, this step of the hero's journey always reminds me of Ganon's castle in the Ocarina of Time. Not the entire journey through the castle, mind you, but rather the steps during which Link must go about the castle destroying 6 evil barriers so the sages can help him when he finally faces Ganondorf. Turning back to our Adventure Time example, though, this is the moment when Finn and Jake enter the brain world of a creature that seems to dwell inside the castle atop Mount Cragdor. This creature presents Finn with a beast that he says is, quote, most certainly evil, and Finn has no problem destroying it as part of what the castle keeper says is the last trial. Ah, but the castle keeper lies, for after Finn has slain the evil beast, he encounters the next step in the hero's journey, the ordeal. The ordeal, step 8 in our journey, is when our hero faces their primary challenge. It's the moment we've all been waiting for. And, as we'll soon see, this is a moment in which the hero often triumphs, but at some cost to themselves or someone they love. In the Enchiridion, Finn, still trapped in the castle keeper's brain world, is presented with the last trial of killing an ant. Finn, wanting to know whether the ant is evil, asks this question of the castle keeper, who says the ant is unaligned. Finn must then decide whether he will kill this unaligned ant, sacrificing some of the goodness in himself to do so, all in the name of receiving the Enchiridion and accomplishing his primary objective. Finn seems trapped until he breaks free of the castle keeper's brain world and kicks him right in the craw, which disables the castle keeper and lets Finn overcome the final challenge without having to kill that very neutral ant. So wait, one might say, but Finn didn't have to sacrifice part of himself, and he didn't even take on the task that was assigned to him. That's true, but Finn did make use of his wits, and foot, in finding an option beyond the do thing one or do thing two paradigm. I've also heard moments like these described as the dilemma, wherein a character faces a tough choice, but finds some sort of loophole in the rules or defies the premise of the choice presented to them. A popular example of this can be found in The Hunger Games, when Katniss encourages Peeta to pretend as though the two of them are going to eat some poisonous berries when they're the final two tributes remaining alive. By nearly eating those berries rather than fighting to the death, they spare both of their own lives, as those in charge of the games did not anticipate this possible third income wherein they both die. This possible third outcome ultimately leads to a fourth outcome, one in which they both live. That's a lot to process, so let's take a minute to reflect on our own work to contextualize this further. Is there a moment in your manuscript where your main character stands to lose the wager they made earlier in their journey? If not poised to possibly lose this wager, might they lose some unforeseen part of themselves or lose someone close to them if they fail to achieve their primary goal? When confronting their primary goal, does your main character take it head-on and do away with the baddie or overcome the very thing that's been terrorizing them and those they love? Does your main character fail but live to fight another day in another epic tale during which they'll take a second shot at defeating their nemesis? Or, alternatively, Do they find some third option to resolve their quandary, like in this episode of Adventure Time or in The Hunger Games? All are valid possibilities. It simply depends on what you think will work best for your story. Now, after having faced and overcome the primary challenge, it might feel like we're all wrapped up with our hero's journey. But that was only step 8, wasn't it? What are the other 4 if our main character has already achieved what they set out to accomplish? Well, let's frame this further in order to answer those questions. Similar to how our first 5 steps in the hero's journey take place at a relatively speedier pace than steps 6 through 8, steps 9 through 12 are similarly condensed. These final steps more or less coincide with what other structure models might call the falling action, or denouement. So what are the final 4 steps? Let's take them all in turn. Step 9 is the reward. Of course, our intrepid hero has earned some sort of reward for their trouble, but it's worth noting that not all rewards are kept. On the contrary, there are situations in which our hero might only temporarily take possession of their reward before it slips through their fingers. Back in Adventure Time, this is the moment in which the so-called manly Minotaur enters into the scene and hands the Enchiridion over to Finn. Finn then receives all sorts of praise from the Minotaur and Keeper. What a reward, right? Now, we don't really get the feeling that Finn might lose this reward, and quite honestly, the next 3 steps in the hero's journey are more or less skipped over in this particular episode of the show. Why, you ask? Well, remember we only have 12 minutes of show available to us, and through these 9 steps, we've already seen the completion of a full story arc where this serialized episode of television is concerned. That the final 3 steps aren't featured is only a testament to the notion that these formulas are meant to be toyed with. Just like how our novel's outlines aren't contracts, we as writers shouldn't feel as though we have to adhere exactly to any one structure, though it'd behoove us to incorporate some sort of structure lest we end up with our characters milling about with nothing to lose. For the purposes of this conversation, though, let's consider how the remaining 3 steps of the hero's journey could have been incorporated into this episode of Adventure Time. Step 10 is the road home. Ordinarily, this step is when our hero finds themselves on the sometimes very literal road back to the ordinary world we saw in step 1. If our character stands to lose the reward they received in step 9, this is the moment where they must confront that possibility. Hypothetically, let's say as Finn and Jake are traveling home, some sort of elf witch floats out of the woods and onto the trail, revealing herself to have been the puppet master behind all our hero's previous trials. She tells Finn that the pages of the Enchiridion are poisonous to the touch, and that he only has minutes to retrieve the antidote from the amulet around her neck. Furthermore, unless the antidote is also poured upon the pages of the Enchiridion itself, its pages will melt away and no hero will ever again have the chance to possess its powers. Do we now have higher stakes than before? Yes. Do we have the reward at risk of being lost? Absolutely. Is this a little dark for a children's TV show? I don't know. Maybe. Possibly. Who's to say? Adventure Time has appealed to audiences of all ages, so they could have gone there, but again, they've got that 12-minute constraint. At any rate, we now have everything necessary for the 11th step, the resurrection. This, yes, this, is the moment when the hero faces their final battle, with higher stakes than before and at risk of everything they've fought for being lost. In our hypothetical 11th step in this Adventure Time episode, let's say Finn battles this witch and ultimately defeats her using similar guile to that which he used to overcome the last trial back on Mount Kragdor. For example, Finn might point over the elf witch's shoulder and say, "Look out, the manly Minotaur is coming." He's not, but let's say Finn says it anyway. When the elf witch turns and looks, perhaps Finn snatches the amulet from her neck, glugs some of its antidote for himself, and pours the remainder over the pages of the Enchiridion. That feels a little cheap, though, doesn't it? It is a bit too easy, but we probably don't have airtime left for a protracted battle at this point. Finn could pay some price for these shenanigans, though. Perhaps after having the antidote poured on them, the ink on the pages runs and some information in the Enchiridion is lost forever. It'd be a bit of a bittersweet moment. Finn would still be a hero, but some knowledge would be lost to the world along the way. Another example of a resurrection can be found in my debut novel, Accounting for It All. I purposely made explicit use of the hero's journey structure in this novel because my protagonist, an adult film star turned accountant, isn't exactly what most people would consider to be a hero. Where the resurrection is concerned in accounting for it all, the main character, Robin, has already overcome her primary accounting-related struggle. But she then finds out there is more to the audit she faced than she realizes. Not only that, but to finally bring the audit and investigation to a close, she'll have to confront a key figure from her past who's also now suddenly entwined directly in this final prong of the investigation. It's not pleasant for the novel's protagonist, but this moment never should be. If you want to know whether or how things shape up for Accounting for It All's former porn star protagonist, you can visit accountingforitall.com to learn more about the book. Accounting for It All aside, we're now ready for the final step of the hero's journey, the return home. This final step is the moment in which our heroes, well, return home. Triumphant, probably, and changed, hopefully, though for the better or worse is up to you. This is a good moment to include reflections on the character's change especially, as it serves as a natural segue into theme, lessons learned, and where our characters might go from there. In our episode of Adventure Time, we actually do see a brief return home, kind of, as Princess Bubblegum appears via a magic bubble to join the celebration that Finn and Jake are having after their triumph over their many trials. It's not a full and complete return to the Candy Kingdom, but given the amount of time the show has to work with, it more than suffices since we're getting prominent characters from the ordinary world back on the screen. And, well, that's it. All 12 steps of the hero's journey, most of which can be found in Season 1, Episode 5 of Adventure Time. Let's recap all 12 steps in list format for a refresher before we wrap things up. Again, the 12 steps are 1. The ordinary world. 2. The call to action. 3. The refusal of the call. 4. Meeting the mentor. 5. Crossing the threshold. 6. Tests, allies, and enemies. 7. The approach. 8. The ordeal. 9. The reward. 10. The road home. 11. The resurrection. And 12. The return home. Take a moment now to think about your current work in progress, or a new project you've been considering starting but haven't quite found a way to proceed with yet. Can you identify any of these steps in your own work? Might using more of them help bolster the structure of your narrative? Might including them in any capacity bring a greater sense of inevitability and focus to your pages? You'll be the best judge of that, but you've at least now got an outline to help you frame this for yourself. Not only that, but you've got an episode of Adventure Time to watch. Like I said earlier, as of this recording, this episode and many others are available for streaming on Hulu. I should also mention if you're interested in a recap of all this information but don't have the time to listen to this episode again, you can find a condensed version of this content on my author page at rrcampbellwrites.com/outlining-your-novel. That's rrcampbellwrites.com/outlining-your-novel. It's there that you'll find two articles on the hero's journey along with similar content on other structure models for the sake of comparison. You can also visit writescast.net/resources, where, in the Biblio Breakdown section, I'll include a link to those posts through the WritesCast Network's official site. Again, that page is writescast.net/resources. Thanks for listening. If you have questions about or comments on this episode of Biblio Breakdown, you can send them to me by email at writescast@gmail.com, or tweet them at me at writescast or at @IamRRCampbell on Twitter. I owe a huge thank you to the patrons of the WritesCast Network, whose direct financial contributions help the WritesCast Network on its journey to become self-sustaining. WritesCast Network patrons earn fantastic rewards including swag, additional votes in listeners' choice polls, and, at the higher levels of support, partial manuscript critiques. If this sounds like it'd be of interest to you, be sure to visit patreon.com/WritesCast to learn more. Next up on the WritesCast Network, it's the return of the Novel Approaches podcast on October 12th. Tune in then to join me and Novel Approaches co-host Sione Ashleman for a conversation on conflict, what it is, where it has its origins, and how we can use it to fuel our stories. Until then, this is R.R. Campbell signing off for Biblio Breakdown here on the WritesCast Network. Write on, and write well. This is the WritesCast Network at writescast.net.